Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Our guests today are Charlie Ralston and Charlotte Titmus from 3Search Recruitment. And full disclosure, I first met Charlie about 5 or 6 years ago for placing me at my previous company. And then I was introduced to Charlotte as Charlotte and her team placed about 85% of my team whilst I was at that business. So we know each other very, very well in terms of the world of marketing recruitment. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
So we always start the podcast with what is your weird work moment of the week? So I'll go first. I have verbally signed my first client as a part of Bluebird Marketing. So that is amazing and weird all rolled into one.
Congrats.
Great. Yeah, congrats. Awesome news. Exciting.
Thank you.
At the moment this week was when I encountered a former client on LinkedIn who I'd worked with ages ago. And this person had posted an announcement of a new role, and the profile image included on the post was AI generated and looked like an entirely different person from the one I'd known. Not just enhanced, but materially different from the person I'd known. And it just made me think that, you know, LinkedIn once felt like one of the few places where authentic real life corporate headshots were still generally accepted. And although I imagine people have been enhancing their CVs since the dawn of time, are we now in an era where our work-life personas are becoming as cultivated and authentic as other social media platforms? And does it matter one way or the other? So that was my weird work moment. How about you, Charlie?
Mine was, so I was at breakfast yesterday with a customer, and I noticed on the table next to me was David Blaine, the magician, and he was doing a variety of different tricks to people. So it was very, very hard to concentrate on the meeting. I'd much rather have been on the table next to me, actually.
Is he just always on, always doing tricks?
Yeah, he's an incredibly tall guy, yeah, and he just arrived and just started doing tricks. So yeah, I think that is just his life.
That's great.
And you, Charlotte?
Yeah, I don't think mine is quite as exciting as Charlie's. I've had it this week where I called someone and they pretend that I was the dentist because they obviously picked up when they were at the desk. I've been called mum before a couple of times as well, but I've never been the dentist. So that was a new one. You kind of realise pretty quickly what they're doing. You just kind of go along with it. But yeah, it was a bit strange.
It's amazing. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Rather than start our interviews asking about your career journey, we want you to tell us, are you where you thought you'd be at this point in your career?
So I'm obviously the co-founder of 3Search, which is a specialist marketing recruiter based across the UK and the US, and also the co-founder of a business called 11 Investments, which is an incubator for recruitment firms. We're now about 100 people collectively in our office in Soho. And it's hard to answer this without sounding too smug. But yeah, I did hope, you know, when we launched the business a decade ago, that the three of us who co-founded it would collectively be able to build something to the point that we have. So yeah, it's been a brilliant journey. It's been a lot of hard work, but it's also given us a lot of financial freedom as well. And yeah, what's also important is we're kind of masters of our own destiny, and we can manage our time as we like. The business we've built is incredibly time intensive. You know, it's a people business. Yeah, there isn't much downtime, but there is at least the flexibility there to manage my time as I like, go on holiday when I want. And as my business partners will joke, I do like a holiday.
Thank you. Charlotte?
I'd probably say no. I guess it depends when I first thought. I think on the flip side, I don't think anyone ever starts their career and thinks, oh, I really, really want to get into recruitment. Like at uni, I didn't even know recruitment was a thing. So it's not like I was at uni. I did English Lit, so everyone thought I was going to be a teacher. I think I had this vision of work of being, I'll go get a proper adult job. I'll probably work in Kerry Wharf or somewhere like that, go in the office 5 days a week, probably wear a suit, and fell into recruitment. And yeah, it's been fantastic. I've been with the business, it'll be 8 years this year. So it's definitely the right thing, I think, for me, and the business where it is now is also very different to when I joined. And to Charlie's point, the flexibility and the growth that we've had over the last 8 years. Yeah, I wouldn't change it. It's been fantastic. That's why I'm still there and probably institutionalized and never leaving. But when I was at uni, I don't think I saw this. No one talks about recruitment. So I don't think it was ever really spoken about. So probably not, but obviously very happy.
How did you both fall into recruitment then? Like, I'm keen to know, Charlotte, how you did, but also, Charlie, how you ended then founding a recruitment business.
Yeah, well, sorry. So I left uni and I wanted to work in the city. Back then, it was 5 days a week in the office, and the idea of going in and wearing a suit really appealed to me. So I ended up at a large corporate recruiter, and I loved it. And I mean, the hours then were 8 till late. So, you know, and that was 5 days a week. But yeah, I just love the energy of it. I love the fact that, you know, it was limitless in terms of the potential of where you could take your career and how many people you could place. So yeah, that really appealed to me. But I didn't come from an entrepreneurial background. I came from a family where, you know, my dad had worked in the same company for 30 years. It was only by meeting my two business partners who I worked with at this corporate recruiter that my eyes were opened to actually, could we build something more in our own image, which was more in line with the way that work was going. The organization we're at was quite old school. You know, you still had to wear your tie all day, and the world of work was changing. And so we thought we could build a business more in our own image that was changing with the world. And yeah, I think that's what we've managed to achieve in the past 10 years.
Charlotte?
I think I fell into it very much by accident. Similar to Charlie, like I said, I thought I was going to go do something super corporate. So the job was advertised on Indeed as graduate consultant. So I think I just thought it was like a junior management consultant. So applied, went to the office, met the three guys, the three founders. I think one of them was in flip-flops. I was in a full suit.
I was just going to say, were you in a suit? I hope so.
Yeah. I was in a suit. The interview was in the kitchen because there were no meeting rooms. And I thought, this is amazing. This is so different to what I anticipated. And yeah, I just had a really, really nice chat with them. They seemed like really genuine people. And literally, I think that was the only interview I went to. Then they offered me the job. I was like, yeah, cool. I'll start on Monday. I'll quit my job at Nando's.
Oh, amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, the interview was in the kitchen with just people walking in and out making tea.
Yeah, I helped make tea for everyone. I think that helped seal the deal.
That's a rite of passage, isn't it? How strong your brew making is.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Brilliant. So every year you guys produce an annual salary report, and you're in the final stages of refining that. So probably a good place to start of what are this year's key takeaways?
Yeah, so we do this annually. I think we had 1,300 people fill it out this year. So predominantly from a marketing background, and that's individuals from early in their career all the way up to C-suite, and a real blend within that. The headline stats include 67% of people are going to be looking for a new job in 2025, and I think that's really powerful. Yeah, it's up slightly on the year before, and it's just a sign of the employment market at the moment. People are kind of always on in terms of looking at new opportunities, and I think people feel more confident than ever in switching jobs and not needing to stay in the same business. So yeah, that's something that jumped out at us. And also, the biggest factor is still pay. We've been through a cost of living crisis. Yeah, inflation has eroded people's pounds, the money they've got in their wallets. So 46% of people who are looking to move are looking to move because they want to pay rise, they need to earn more. And on the heels of that, it's flexible working as the second thing that is really important to people. And third on that list is company culture. And yeah, I'm sure we can dive more into those as we talk.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So I assume the trend for organizations then is to get people back into the office. And at the same time, you've got an increasing number of people looking for flexible working. Is that what you're saying? So how do you square that circle?
I think what we're seeing is that it's different across industries as well. So in terms of my particular focus, I manage our real estate professional services B2B function. So within the wider B2B professional services world, I think a lot of those big businesses are staying relatively flexible. So I was kind of looking back through ahead of this. I was looking back through the roles that my team have had over the last year. And professional services has predominantly stayed kind of 2 to 3 days a week in the office. I think where I'm seeing a massive shift is in the real estate world. So I think there were two clients that are flexible. Almost every single job we've had within architecture, construction and real estate have been 4 or 5 days a week in the office. If we'd picked up a role 3, 4 years ago, I think I remember being on a client meeting with Charlie in, I think it was 2021, and the client was saying that they wanted someone in 5 days a week, and we couldn't help them. There were no candidates that I was speaking to in 2021 that would look at 5 days a week. It was just absolute no-go. Like, we wouldn't be able to find them anyone. Whereas now it's really common in that world. I think a lot of candidates are getting more used to it. So within that world, it's seen as getting more normal. But on the flip side, salary has to reflect that. So I think we're starting to see some salaries increase, or the expectations of candidates increase because they're having to pay to go to the office more. Or I guess that counteracts perhaps the lack of flexible working. But yeah, I wouldn't say we're seeing that across other industries. And I think that's because of the physical nature of the industry of selling an office space or selling a development from a marketing point of view. I think those businesses want people there. But I don't know if we're seeing anything, Charlie, across the other industries.
Yeah, I'd say it's similar in financial services. There's been a big drive back to the office in that sector. I think that's partly because the front office, they need to be together collaborating. But I think they then have a one size fits all. So, you know, other departments also need to be in the office as well. It's because of the route they're going down. You know, looking at other areas, we still see a lot of flexibility in the technology space, although it has moved back from full remote working to between 2 to 3 days on average. There's certainly more flexibility in those tech businesses, and also in consumer and D2C companies as well. There's a level of flexibility. Yeah. The majority of companies seem to be landing on this hybrid model where, you know, they have a few days of collaboration. Now, ideally, with some anchor days when everyone is going to be in the office on those days, but then still allowing people the flexibility to have a life outside of work and drop the kids off or do the washing or go to a yoga class or whatever it is. That's where the majority of people are landing. But yeah, there is this rub between what employers want and what employees want. And
yeah.
We see that in our own business, 3 days in the office and 2 at home. And being honest, I get people coming to me going, that's too much. And so there is this rub.
Tension, yeah.
Tension, yeah, that exists.
And what are you hearing back directly from, obviously you've got the stats and the data, but is it frustrating for the hiring managers and the business side? How are they putting more things in play around that? Like you say, it has to be salary, but what else is happening, or are you hearing from the front line?
In terms of why it's changing, or
is it more intense than ever? And is it, as I've been a hiring manager for the past 5 years, and it's I remember, I think, was it 22 was the great resignation, and everybody, like the candidate market, the sands were shifting. You get somebody at first interview and they were gone by seconds. It was wild. And then last year, it was still, there was just still that tension of, full-time office and what is it? Do you think it's going to be like that for the rest of the year? Are we still going to see it's like candidates market?
It's normalizing, I'd say.
Yeah.
And it differs at different levels. I'd say at what we call kind of mid-level, kind of manager level, there's a lot of demand for talent. Like, it's been a really challenging market for more senior candidates. Is what we've found. So that they're the bracket that has found it most challenging to find work, I'd say. But yeah, it does feel like after the spike in demand for talent out of COVID, and then what was a crash? We are entering a period of normality. If anything's ever normal anymore.
Yeah, well, that's the new normal is.
It's all weird.
Yeah.
It's all weird. The whole thing is weird.
Yeah, you mentioned culture as being an important component in candidate selection. What specific aspects of culture are emerging as more important now than ever before?
Yeah, I think something that Charlotte said earlier, actually, about when she met myself and my two founders, like people want to work for genuine people that they think are authentic, people that I think they think have got their interests in heart, they're going to be able to work with. It's like, it's probably one of the biggest shifts I've seen in the past kind of 5 or so years. Like when I was starting out, I was just happy to have a job.
Yeah.
Whereas I think people really care about who they're working for, what's the purpose of that company. And I think people really kind of delve into that a lot more, as they should, when making a decision on where to work.
And I think at the senior level, I think I've seen it more when speaking to candidates, of them wanting to work somewhere where that they have trust from the board or from the senior leadership. They want trust in the decisions they're making. They want trust in how they're going to run their team, what days they're going to be in the office. Like, I think that's partly, I guess, part of the rub that we're seeing that we mentioned earlier, of business wanting people in more, but senior leaders not necessarily want to be dictated to, but having that trust on the board, or ideally a seat at the table, of being able to then run their part of the business how they'd like. So I think that's a challenge.
Yeah, trust and choice. Mm. It's, you know, trusted to do your job wherever you need to do your job, be it however many days, but have that choice as well. Can we define what fractional means and the rise of the fractional leader in the past sort of year? Because it's really boomed, I'd say. And then also dig into why that is now more appealing for businesses.
Definitely, yeah. So, if, as you say, fractional has risen. It's, you know, definitely one of the buzzwords of 2024, and still is going to 2025. Someone who has a fractional career is working with multiple brands on an interim basis at the same time. So it's normally quite project focused. But they'll have multiple clients rather than just working with one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been something that I think candidates have wanted to do for a long period of time, particularly experienced people. You know, I remember over the past decade, everyone's going, well, I'd love to go in and do a piece of strategy for a business and support them at board level, but there hasn't actually been the demand there for it. There's been this mismatch. But actually, what we've seen over the past few years is businesses understand the value of it, particularly at an SME level. So, you know, if you're an SME and, you know, you don't want to hire, let's say, a marketing director, a CMO, you've come to the realization that the talent is out there on a fractional basis to get someone in one day, 2 day a week who can work on some really important projects for you. And deliver some great work that otherwise you wouldn't be able to afford on a permanent basis. Mm. And it's just, yeah, it's one of these trends that has just taken time to catch on. But yeah, we've certainly seen that businesses now see the value of it. And it's something that we get asked about more and more, which, yeah, I think it's a real positive. I think it's a real positive because I think it works for candidates. You know, it gives people a variety, which is interesting, and it also gives people flexibility. So yeah, I think it's a real positive trend for everyone.
So for people who want to start to position themselves as a potential fractional candidate, how do they do that?
Yeah, it's interesting because you have to be a bit of a salesperson as well as, you know, whatever your core skill set is, right? Because it's about going out and finding that work. It's not often advertised, you know, and so it's normally through your network. And most people start it by working for a client or a business they've previously worked for. That's normally the leg up. And it's normally, you know, a couple of days a week. And off the back of that, you then spend the rest of your week out there pitching, basically, as Dan's been successfully doing recently.
I'm going to share an interesting story. I'm in your 3Search Women in Marketing WhatsApp group, which has been phenomenal. So when I was moving closer to the idea that I was actually going to step out of full-time corporate life into this world of fractional consultant, you know, whatever it was going to be, I slid into the DMs of some of the women who I knew were, you know, a few months ahead of me, and they're all probably at the same, like, age bracket-ish as I am, all doing it for the same reasons and trying to find our feet in it. And huge thanks. Not one person ghosted me. I've had copy chats. Someone actually reached out to me yesterday just being like, how's it all going? And it's wonderful because the support network is there, but it interestingly, we're all women and we're all, again, similar points in our career with so much that we want to give and have got to give, but we're doing it for various, you know, probably some similar reasons. And then once I took the leap of faith and started to market myself, which was awful, you know, as you say, you're suddenly, you go from marketing a business and people and services, whatever, to marketing you. You're then your own BD person, which is just blah. But I had to market work I'd done in-house, market me and all of those things. And I marketed as a fractional. And then somebody who I was kind of going after messaged a person in common that we had on LinkedIn saying, what's this fractional thing? Does she just do a normal job? You know? And I really laughed at that because we were then connected and it was great. We were connected because of the people we had in common, which is, again, the beauty and the power of LinkedIn, I think. And it just goes to show that the fractional piece, it's working, but it still has some way to go, I think. But the appeal is there. You get seniority, you get experience, you get, you know, almost consultancy level, and you don't have to put somebody full time on your payroll. That's got to be a real sell for some businesses, right?
Absolutely. And I think as well, what we're seeing with growing boutique businesses that have never had marketing before. So I see that quite a lot with my colleague who basically reflects any role that I would recruit on the perm side, on the interim side. So we almost tag team fairly frequently and have done over the past year, more so than any previous year, of growing businesses, having absolutely no idea what they need, and being quite nervous about making that commitment about kind of a full-time hire and it being the right level. So we've put in, I guess a fractional CMO or an interim person to go in, really establish what they need, what are their pain points, what's their strategy going to be, and then they can help write the job spec, plan out the team, and that isn't their forever opportunity, but they can go in, solve a business problem, and then I can swoop in and place the perm person for them, and everyone feels a bit more comfy doing that.
Just got two questions here. Is there a normal seniority level for fractional? Is it head of above, director above, or just CMO?
I believe it has to be director and above. Uh-huh. I mean, that's a personal view. Uh-huh. I think, you know, traditional head off, perhaps you haven't quite got the skill set quite yet to do it. If you're a small business with as an individual, uh-huh. You know, when you're heading up a department, which uh-huh. I typically say as a director, that's when you can step into it. It's interesting. Dan, I don't know what your experience is, but I think there's probably a perception with some people that if you go fractional, it gives you more time. But actually, I think I speak to a lot of people who actually have to work harder and more hours to run a fractional career because, you know, you are doing those multiple jobs at the same time.
Yeah. So you look at across social media last year, everybody was a solopreneur, I think was the new phrase. And it was all coffee and Pilates across everybody's Instagram. And that was your glamorous life. Like talking to Ellen last week, she's a founder. She's got two businesses, but she does go to that Pilates class at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, which doesn't fit the normal model of working. But she's also working till 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. But she's absolutely fine with it because she's creating her own destiny and it fits her life. And for me personally, I've stepped out of the corporate, you know, full-time office role. But I've been so busy, really, really busy in driving, finding business, networking, all of that stuff. But it takes a while for that work to land. And that was the unknown part. I don't know what my lead gen cycle, you know, timeline was. This is all going to be really, really new. And it takes things like that to figure things out. And that could probably be a whole other podcast on what do you do? You know, what is the advice? But I suppose what's going to be interesting for listeners, like from a recruiter side, if director and above, that's really important. Like what type of experience people would want to see, you know, from that. And I mean, have you guys firsthand seen a shift of, or a trend or an increase of some people stepping out and doing this fractional work or even starting their own business?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the last year we've spoken to a lot of senior marketers that want to be doing that fractional CMO. And I think it's twofold between people unfortunately finding themselves out of work and thinking actually this is a bit of a leap of faith, but yeah, this could be my next opportunity and I'm going to build this opportunity out for myself. Or I think, yeah, I literally spoke to a marketing director I know really well last week who is in a permanent position And they were asking my opinion about, yeah, stepping away and how they do that and what my advice would be. I think my advice was, yes, kind of, it's all or nothing. You can't really be wondering, do I do it, do I not do it? If you do it, it's a commitment and you've got to give it your all. And like Charlie said, you've got to really be networking and go to events and thinking about kind of your existing network and how you're going to tap into that, which probably feels quite uncomfortable at times, but it is a commitment. So yeah, but I definitely think we've seen that rise.
I was smiling because we had that chat probably, what was it, July last year? And I was crying in a car park outside a soft play centre. And you said, Dan, the market's terrible, don't do it. But I was clearly having that moment of like, what do I do here? And we can be really candid here. You know, I had a lot of chats with Alice, Alice did this 15 years ago, you know, and I messaged Alice, said, have you ever left a job, no job to go to? And she said, that's how Neatline was born. And Alice really helped. It was like coaching / therapy, really. And she said, you've got to get comfortable with the scary stuff, you know, and do something scary every day so that whatever it is becomes normal. So like we touched on earlier, selling yourself, like promoting yourself and your services, that's not normal to me, but you have to start putting yourself out there. And no, it doesn't scare me as much. Started a podcast, terrifying. But here we are. And I suppose, Charlie, you're a founder. All of that stuff in the beginning must have been bloody, I mean, or what was it? Or terrifying?
Yeah, it was. You know, I was fortunate in that I had two business partners. I think that was even more of a benefit than I realized at the time. And I was also at a point in my life where I had a mortgage, but I didn't have a family at that point. So, you know, I was comfortable doing 60 hours a week plus. My wife said, yep, let's give this a go for a year. Let's see how it goes. And if it fails, I could go and get a job. I was at a good point of life to be able to do that.
So it's interesting, this discussion about fractional, because I feel like this is what I've been doing for 12 years. We didn't call it fractional until a few months ago. This is a new word for me. But I held some roles where I worked for, say, 6 months to a year, doing a couple of days a week. But then I've also been a general consultant, which sounds a lot like what fractional is, but maybe with less of the sort of comfort of knowing that you've got a solid contract of certain number of days per week. My impression has always been that I'm effectively unemployable at this point because I've been out of the official workforce for so long, despite the fact that I've worked for 40 some businesses. My impression is always that if you're looking to go back into a full-time role or even a part-time role, they're looking for recent experience that relates to being in another role similar in a similar type of organization. And I'm wondering, maybe hopefully, just in terms of keeping my own options open, is that breaking down a little bit? Is with this sort of mass entrepreneurialism that we're seeing, is there more opportunity for candidates to leave the workforce, work in a different kind of way, and then go back into it more comfortably? Or are we still seeing you're either in or you're out, and it's hard to shift between them?
It is certainly still hard to shift between them. I do see people making that transition. There's a good senior contact of mine who had ran his own consultancy, marketing consultancy, for 2 or 3 years. He had a business partner, but actually longed to be part of a company's journey and part of its fabric again. So he's been looking over for over 6 months, but found something and started as a CMO of a company last week. So yeah, I think you can certainly frame your experience, your consulting experience now, and approach permanent companies and get permanent roles. And I think it is easier than it was perhaps 5-10 years ago to do that. But I mean, there are still barriers. You know, people have preconceptions.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest challenges, right? You know, if you've got a CEO as an example who's been in that business for 20 years, you know, he or she perhaps looks for people who've got longevity in roles. So yeah, there are still certainly barriers that exist.
Do you think you'll see a generational shift in that way? Because we do obviously have people in more senior roles who have held them for longer than we're seeing emerging generations hold roles. Do you think that impression will change over time?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. The latest generation coming through, they're much more fluid in terms of career and work. They're comfy changing jobs every 6-12 months and doing it for a small pay increase or because there's something they're not particularly happy with. What's interesting, actually, at that level, they haven't really experienced the hardship of not being able to find work. So it'll be interesting to see whether that changes at some point in their careers. But no, I do see a kind of generational shift happening.
So shifting gears slightly, we've been hearing a lot about DEI initiatives from the U.S. government, and really an association between DEI initiatives and hiring underskilled people. I'd love to get your perspective on whether or not that's a fair assessment in any way, or what you sort of see happening with DEI currently and where you see it going from here.
Interesting question, actually. So it was a massive topic that we were asked about on most calls in 21-22. No exaggeration, I don't think I've been asked by a client about DEI in the past 12 months. It is totally dropped down the agenda as businesses have focused on profits and cutting costs, and they haven't seen it as a priority. And so, there's been a real shift, which, I don't have the answers as to why or what the long-term trend will be. But, that's just my personal experience and what I've seen over the past 12 months.
Is that both in the UK and the US, because you operate in both?
Yeah, good question. I can only really comment on the UK because I only speak to our UK customers. I don't have line of sight as to what the state of play is in the US at the moment.
Mm.
Have you been asked about it recently, Charlotte?
I've just gone through probably two or three PSL tender processes with big property businesses and big professional services businesses, and I think as part of that process, they like to ask their suppliers around that. So they've asked kind of what our policies are, and I've had that conversation with them. Yeah, I remember, like you say, Charlie, that it was almost on every single conversation that we were having. And other than a few businesses that we've spoken to that set up hiring processes as part of that and are still using those processes now, I don't think I've really been asked about it at all, which, it's quite shocking.
Yeah, it's just dropped down the corporate agenda, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
I'm also curious about the recruitment process now. So my space, purely anecdotally from what I hear, the introduction of AI and sort of screening CVs and things like that is, I would say by and large, what I hear is that it degrades the experience of applying for jobs. People feel like they don't get a fair shot, that sort of thing. I'm curious what your thoughts on that, how you use AI and whether you see it as being a real benefit to helping you find the right candidate, or where you draw the line with it.
Charlotte's really smiling here.
It's a really good question. I think there are uses for it. I don't think it helps our searching capability or us building relationships with people. Charlie might disagree with me, but in terms of just how we find candidates or how we build relationships with people, I think LinkedIn is a fantastic platform, but it's been updating over the last 6 months or a year, and I'm not in the detail enough to understand the tech side of it. But it's making searching for people quite difficult at times because it's now trying to utilize AI to help us and make our lives easier. But we actually have to try and strip it away because we know what we're looking for. We've had the conversation with the client. So assuming it knows what we're looking for, adding these certain filters that it assumes we need, is actually making it a bit difficult. There are definite uses for it that help us in terms of content and job adverts and things like that. But in terms of screening or finding people, I think that is still human-to-human skill. I don't think that is affecting or helping us at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly parts of the recruitment process that can be automated. But I heard a great story last week. A senior candidate of mine had done an AI interview for 45 minutes. He then got an email a minute later going, "Congratulations, you're through to the next stage. Click here to book in a meeting with a human." And there was no availability for 2 months. So tech and kind of human power clashing a bit there. So look, I think it's going to have benefits, but there are challenges as well. Like we can't post a marketing director job anymore because we're inundated with over 500 applicants within 24 hours because technology has made it so easy for someone to apply for a job. There's no barrier there. So we can't, even with technology, filter through those people appropriately. You kind of then do fall back on those human relationships. And I think that's the fractional piece as well, right? That, you go back to who do I know in my network and who do I trust? Because, I think technology, you can't build that trust.
No, it's your first protocol it's the first thing I did when I started on my own, but also on my search, I remember being, there's dark moments when you're looking for a job, right? When you're you know, there's no jobs out there. Charlotte, we had that chat, and you were just like, there's no senior roles at the moment. Like, it's desolate. And so you go to LinkedIn and you look at, you do your filter and your search, and it's, this job has already got, it's been live for 3.5 seconds, and it's got 100+ applicants. And you just think, you know, it's almost soul destroying in that sense. It can be really, really challenging. And that's when, I don't know, I think when you have relationships with recruiters who you know are going to call you back to give you the lay of the land and honest feedback and things like that, that's when, you know, human interaction relationships will always override AI.
But yeah, it is going to rapidly evolve the recruitment process over the next few years. But yeah, it's how that is going to end up is, yeah, I wish I knew.
Are there particular skills that you think are emerging as critical skills that people should be building right now? Either things that are old school skills that are reemerging, or new skills that people should be trying to attain during their job search to make themselves stronger candidates?
Yeah, I think the basic characteristics of what you look for when you're hiring someone hasn't changed. You know, you want someone who, you know, is a good communicator, is engaging, you know, shows kind of desire, motivation to kind of build a career. Those basic characteristics, haven't changed. I think what we're seeing a lot of is companies want people who are Swiss Army knives, who can do lots of things. And quite often, companies are asking for multiple people in one, and that's our job as recruiters and everyone else's job as candidates to go, well, that I can't do all that. That's not possible, and actually push back. But having said that, you know, having a broad range of skills, you know, having a, you know, understanding of new technology and how that can improve the way you do your job. You know, I think that's the advice I give to people. Constantly be trying to broaden the set of skills that you have.
And then I think ensuring that you have all of those skills and the platforms that you've used and everything on your LinkedIn, on your CV. Clients know that we are posting adverts and getting 1,500 applicants within a week. They think it is a client's market right now, and we're noticing it's very square peg, square holes. Clients are very set on what they're looking for, because they know that they can probably find that. So I think I've had a few roles. I've noticed over the last 6 months, clients being really particular about what softwares or what systems or what platforms that they want people to have worked on. So I think it's just, there isn't any key skill set, but it's just making sure that all of those that you've used, you'll make it as obvious as possible that you've done them. Because I think that's the rise that I'm seeing of clients being really particular about the specific skills that they want. Or platforms,
yeah.
Like I said.
Two things to add there. Oh, sorry, go on.
If I look at it from our business, yeah, so 100-person business, we've got an operations function that supports us. I've got a lady does talent, but she also does HR. I've got an L&D person, but he also does a lot of technology. So it's kind of people kind of merging roles and picking up more responsibility, which makes you more useful, makes you more employable.
Yeah, and I was just going to say first-hand experience for both of those points you made. Charlie, I think when we first spoke, last year, and I said I'm starting to look out for another role, first thing you said, this is quite common, marketers look after social media, but actually we've had a look at your own LinkedIn profile lately. It is the first place, because it really helps that search, making sure everything's up to date, making sure you've got all the right tags, all your experience, and like you say, platform systems and all of those things, to be, you know, be as strong as you possibly can, because sadly it all works on bloody algorithms, and we do have to hack the algorithm. Like, are you posting? Are you engaging? Are you doing the basics for you that you as a marketer are probably doing for whatever business you're currently in right now? And then there is this challenge of the square peg, square hole, and it does irk me, I'm not going to lie, because remember, Charlotte, there was a company you were putting me forward for who didn't actually agree to see me at first because I was a head of. They only wanted marketing director, even though I had 8 years experience reporting directly into board level by that point. So there wasn't a director above me at those points, but because of that title, and that's when things can become a bit challenging. And I suppose if we are being screened by AI first, that's going to automatically, not in the world of research, but on other platforms, you're just going to be out of the running. So that's when I think we go back to relationships and somebody truly knowing you. The way you work, the way you operate, and your experience is going to be powerful for that next step of whatever it is in your career.
Do you have any key LinkedIn tips? I imagine you're asked this quite regularly. What are the things people should be doing when they look at their profiles and how they use LinkedIn?
Definitely, yeah. So you need to see it as your own mini website. You know, so it needs to be keyword rich. You need to think about your SEO. So if you want to work in a specific sector, if you want to work in private equity, but you haven't got private equity on your LinkedIn profile, well, you're not going to come up in someone's search. So it is really about taking a step back and going, what is it that I can do and what is it that I want to do, and does the content that I have on my LinkedIn page scream that? To Dan's point about the algorithm, posting a couple of times a week, just having a level of activity on the platform will help boost you from a ranking point of view as well. So yeah, it is important to be active. You don't need to be writing thought leadership pieces on there, but at least liking and commenting on other people's posts is useful as well.
I would imagine also, and maybe it's that I have a couple of businesses that do slightly different things. LinkedIn is obviously gives me one page to talk about everything that I do. And as you said, the more focused you can be about where you want to go next, the better. So actually, if you are trying to keep your options open, there are several different types of roles and different types of organizations you'd be interested in doing and think you're quite well positioned to do. Actually, the platform, I would assume, limits your ability to have all of those conversations, and you're better off having just one.
So true. If you look at it, it's what you're trying to achieve from LinkedIn is inbound leads. So what inbound leads do you want to focus on? Because yeah, as you said, Alice, you can't, if you try and say that you do four or five different things, whoever lands on that top bit of the profile that they can see, it won't be clear what your superpower is, what your expertise is. So I think you are better focusing on the core area that you want to be heard for there. And then obviously when you speak to people and you're out with your network, you can talk about the breadth of skills that you've got.
Before we'll wrap up now, but any predictions for the year ahead?
Any predictions for the year ahead?
Well, what would you like to see, you know?
I'd like to see an improving market. You know, we're very good at being half glass full recruiters. So, you know, we've kind of been putting a positive spin on things for the past 18 months or so, but it's been tough. It's been a tough market for people. And yeah, I just ask for a bit of stability in the economy, which would just allow businesses to invest and hire people and yeah, invest in their people, train them and so on. It's hopefully not too much to ask.
Mm-hmm. Charlotte?
Yeah, I think we're probably going to stay busy on the contracting interim side of things. I think that just rose so much last year, and I think that's where we're going to stay the case. So I think that's really positive. And then hopefully an opportunity, now that we saw that incline last year, an opportunity to then work with those businesses, help them build their teams now that they're a bit clearer about what they're looking for. So yeah, I agree with Charlie. I think I've had a few conversations over the last few weeks and decided to stay very positive, which is good. And everyone that I've spoken to over the last few weeks seems really busy. So I don't know, this January compared to last January, it feels like everyone is absolutely slammed. Everyone's talking about their plans for the year. Like, there does seem to be just this general feeling of positivity. So I don't know if we've all just had enough and we're deciding this year it's going to be fine.
We've hit rock bottom.
Yes,
and there's nowhere to go but up.
It must get better.
Yeah, certainly in my experience, you know, obviously I've run a couple of consultancies. Last January was dire. The worst I'd seen in 12 years. The first time I ever actually had a bit of an existential crisis about what am I doing? Am I doing the right thing? Do I have the right skills? Am I still marketable? First time I ever really had those conversations with myself this January, a completely different picture.
Yeah, everyone seems really, really busy, which is, yeah, great to hear.
And those who aren't busy, they're in Thailand, because everybody I know seems in bloody Thailand this year. So that's my goal for next year.
I want to go to Thailand.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Where can people find you? And we'll pop it in the show notes.
Find us on LinkedIn. You can find us on our website as well, threesearch.co.uk. But yeah, if anyone out there is looking for work or yeah wants to speak to us, yeah, LinkedIn or the websites are the best place to get us.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Really interesting insights that I'm sure a lot of people will find very valuable. So really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you.
Thanks
thank
for
having
you
us.
Having us.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you next time.